and welcome to my hearth. A really important theme in storytelling is the relationship between humans and animals. And if you think about your first stories when you were younger, I should imagine that amongst them would be a tale of animals. I've already mentioned in these podcasts my love of The Wind in the Willows, and that was one of my favourite stories when I was younger. And of course, the delight of that particular story is the way the little animals are so human. I identified completely with Mowgli when I first read the story because, as I said to you, I was very small and rather shy. As I got older, I would have been a natural to play Toad, just because of my shape. And I think in terms of my outlook, I could have also played Ratty. Probably now, at my age, I'd have to play Badger. However, this whole process of animals being like humans is called anthropomorphic. And our modern culture is filled with examples of this. Of course, we didn't invent the whole idea. I started this sequence of podcasts talking about the Greeks, and of course, famously, Aesop in his fables uses animals to make points. These animals are given human attributes and think like humans. Even in the Bible, animals are seen as part of God's creation and are therefore susceptible to his will. They have become part of the conscious and unconscious landscape of our lives. In iconography, we often see an image of the Virgin Mary coming into Bethlehem, riding on a donkey, and in the stable at Christ's birth, there is often an ass represented. Christ rides into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday on an ass, and that is to show his connection to humanity rather than his divinity, where he would be riding on a horse. We have to remember that for older civilizations, animals were such an essential part of people's lives. In our age of industrialization and mechanization, we forget that medieval people, for instance, relied completely on animals for their survival. Horses and oxen drew their carts, carried their burdens, delivered their goods, and helped them plough their fields. A good horse was as much a symbol of wealth and status as a modern car is today. People looked after their animals as much as though they were part of their family, which to a certain extent they were. Again, in medieval times, the animals slept inside in the lower part of the house, and the people slept upstairs and benefited from the heat that the animals gave off. The animals provided food and strength and even security. I love programs set in the countryside, and you can often see the relationship that farmers have with their stock. My favourite animal is a pig. They are so intelligent and have such strong personalities that who could fail to be captivated by them? So, of course, they made a perfect cast of characters to be in George Orwell's novel Animal Farm. This allegory, based on the rise of communism in Russia, needed such strong central figures that only pigs would do. It's interesting that we both love and hate them at the same time. Now, I've entitled this episode If I Could Talk to the Animals, which is, of course, a reference to Dr. Dolittle. But the idea of animals talking in stories, as I say, goes way back in history. The Victorians in particular were fascinated by the idea of animals having a conscious thought. When Alice follows the white rabbit down the rabbit hole into Wonderland, she then meets a whole collection of creatures that speak. They are extremely eccentric because Dodson, Lewis Carroll, based them on the people that he worked with in Oxford colleges. The eccentricities of academia are perfectly coordinated with the eccentric behaviour of the creatures in Wonderland. As mad as a March hare, hatters were supposed to be affected by the mercury used in the process of making their wares. The caterpillar, smoking his drugged hooker, behaves in a way that I'm sure Dodson would recognise. Moving forward, the whole jungle speaks to Mowgli in The Jungle Book, and that has become one of the most potent stories in modern storytelling. The animals of the Hundred Acre Wood in the stories of Winnie the Pooh and the House at Pooh Corner means that Christopher Robin has conversations with these lovely and endearing creatures. There is an expression that people get to look like their pets, and certainly animals can replicate the behaviour of their owners. Storytellers use this to great effect. Bill Sykes' mastiff, Bullseye, in Oliver Twist, is really a small version of him. David Copperfield's child bride has a dog which he treats like a baby. Animals are in stories both for good and evil. Sherlock Holmes and the Hound of the Baskervilles is dealing with a creature that has become monstrous in its reputation. A hound from hell. And of course, going back to the Greeks, they believed that the gate of hell, the entrance to the underworld, was guarded by a three-headed dog, Cerberus. Because of their place in both myth and storytelling, animals have become connected with their reputation. Owls are symbols of wisdom and creatures of the night. The poor old bat will forever be associated with Dracula and vampires. Lions are called the kings of the jungle, and because of their kingly look, have achieved a reputation of being the master of their region. They are used as a symbol of godliness. The connectivity of nature, where certain creatures prey on others, whilst other creatures are used to dispose of the remains, is seen as both a symbol of good and evil. So it's important to see how the connection of the understanding of humanity by the Greeks, the fact that we are a spirit that has a soul that inhabits a human body, the three-part nature of humanity, is also reflected in the animal kingdom. Animal characteristics can be either base or intellectual and intelligent or spiritual. Animals are seen as having sense and sensitivity and an intelligence and meaning beyond their real existence. Many religious texts talk about spiritual beings, and some of them have animal characteristics. In The Chronicles of Narnia, C.S. Lewis creates a world where many creatures speak. And again, these creatures have had to decide whether they're on the side of good or evil. It's worth mentioning again here the power of some of the iconography in Harry Potter. And in this wizarding world, the idea of fantastic beasts has become a whole tale of its own. In the stories of the East, there are fabulous creatures that talk. Birds and beasts and dragons. Now, when you are brought up in the country, creatures were still, at the time that I was young, very important. Where we lived was surrounded with farms, and it wasn't unusual to meet large animals on the road as part of your daily life. Now, a quick reminder that I was a very small child, so a full-sized horse or even a large cow was quite daunting when it was in your way. Looking back on it, of course, it's quite strange that when you encountered a creature, you spoke to it. I suppose we were so used to animals being spoken to by their owners. If you knew its name, then of course that gave you a psychological advantage. If it was badly behaved, then of course you could report it later and complain about how it had treated you. Now, we were told as children not to go into the farmer's fields, whether they were growing crops or being used to graze their animals. If you had to do a journey across part of a farm, then you really had to make certain that you went round the edge of the field and didn't cross it. There were many stiles and kissing gates, which allowed you access, but meant that the creatures, the animals, could not get out. One of the most frightening images in the first film of Jurassic Park is where the Velociraptor has learnt to open a kitchen door. We were also told by the adults that creatures could smell your fear. And for me in particular, that made me very wary of large dogs. Now, I couldn't help but show my fear because when I was very little, I was bitten by a dog. And since then, I have been very careful and very wary as I approach an animal that I don't know. At one point, if I saw a dog off a lead as I was walking along the pavement, then I would cross over the road. Now, it's rather obvious to say that, of course, I love well-behaved animals. But as a result of some of these childhood encounters, I am very wary of badly behaved ones. And I shall talk about more of the animals in the village next time.